There's one more guy, right?
Yep.
Is he somewhere in here?
Yeah, he's in.
Go grab him. I don't want people to miss a single second of this amazing opportunity to learn some history.
Cool.
We spent the morning at the Grand Village.
Mm-hmm.
And had a conversation about indigenous genocide. So it's been a heavy morning, and it's going to be another intense afternoon, I think. All right. Now where's Nellie? Did she go outside to look for him?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. She went to look for... Sorry. All right, folks, without further ado, I want to welcome our incredible host, Jeremy Houston, who I feel so privileged to have the opportunity to meet during my research here and have some very long conversations with. Also, Ellie Irons came along, and we had a really rich day of discussions, and then we've been emailing for a couple months now. I'll briefly introduce Jeremy, and then he can tell you more about himself later. He's a Natchez native and a co-founder of Miss Lou Heritage Group and Tours, which I've told you is a very special, very richly historically contextualized tours of Natchez that focus on African American history and experiences that are often omitted or sanitized or whitewashed out of most of the traditional antebellum Natchez historical tours, which are offered to visitors around the world, which often function as, like I said before, sort of sites of fantasy about what the South might have been like if the Confederates had won. And those are a very particular kind of ideological tour that's been very popular in Natchez, and Natchez is well known for. So Miss Lou has come to fill a very important gap in the discourse and to fill in a gap in the historical record and the way in which people coming here can get to know the history of this town. And I don't think that we could have had a better ambassador to sharing important elements of this rich, complicated history here than Jeremy, who graduated from Northeast Mississippi Community College in 2007 and was a 5-year veteran in Afghanistan in the U.S. Marine Corps. So he's also a chairman of the National Black United Front in Natchez and has written and performed a series of historical reenactments, including Narrative of a Natchez Slave, which we are super lucky to get to see tonight, Isabella and the Prince, Hiram and John and the Lynches. So without any further ado, I want to just shut up and give the floor over to our amazing host. And he's going to lead us through the town and tell us the history. And please feel free to ask questions whenever you need to. He's an amazing tour guide, and yeah, we're really lucky to have this opportunity. Okay. Thank you, Jeremy. Welcome. Right.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to welcome you all to Natchez, Mississippi. And I also like to welcome you to the Natchez Museum of African American History and Culture. A little bit about myself, like she said, I was born here in Natchez. Went to school here and graduated. Did about 2 years in college where I played basketball, and then I went to the Marine Corps after that and served in the Marine Corps for a couple of years. And we came back here 2012. And by 2016, we opened Miss Lou Heritage Group and Tours because at first, well, some people had told us that we couldn't be tour guides here in the city of Natchez. And it was some prominent, I guess, African-American people who told us that. And we went and asked a couple of other people, and they gave us the confirmation that, hey, you can do tours here. You should open your own tour business. And so from that idea, we opened Miss Lou Heritage, and in the 3-year period that we've been open, or been open for business, I know I've toured over probably about close to 5,000 to 6,000 people about the history and heritage of African Americans here in Natchez. And then one of the things I saw that we had a need for, because I would come here and tourists like yourself or visitors or students will come here and say, well, where is the Forks of the Road? And I would say, wow, well, you don't know where is that? You know, or where's the William Johnson House, or where's the Walking Street Cemetery or the Rhythm Nightclub? And so to fit that need, to take people to those sites instead of just showing them on a picture, we wanted to take them and let them actually stand where the historical event or significance to the area, you know, took place. So and that was the whole motivation behind getting our tour started. And then to give a different image of Natchez, because Natchez was not the Gone with the Wind story as it's been portrayed to be, and everybody didn't live happily ever after. And the contributions of African Americans, especially during the Reconstruction era, I had never been told that all my years of living in Natchez. So once I was able to find out who these people were, what happened, in the very neighborhood that I lived in, I said, man, I would tell my friends who I grew up with, man, we got civil rights history, we got slavery history, and it's dealing with black people, and black people own this land here, on what we're standing at. And from there, it just started a cycle to where we are now. So this very location that we're at now is the Natchez Museum of African American History and Culture. This museum was started in 1990 by seven women who wanted to preserve our history, heritage, and culture of Natchez. And it was spearheaded, if you see that lady right there, under that, this petition here. Of one of his barbershops here in the town area. His house is about a block away from here, or two blocks away from here on State Street.
Stay close, guys, because the sound gets diffused.
And here's all the founders of the museum in 1990.
Try to squeeze in close so you can actually hear,
because
it's loud in here when people talk.
Oh my God. All right. Got her thing
going. She's great.
Right. And what helped Natchez become a huge economic power during the antebellum period, or when the Americans take control of Natchez or the area, was, as you see right here, white cotton and black labor. And the picture to my left here are scenes that you will see coming up and down the Mississippi River during that period of time. When they would have on those steamboats, you had different materials, goods, cotton, and also the transportation of black people, as Natchez had one of the largest slave ports in the South. And here in Natchez is where a lot of enslaved people were sold for the expansion of cotton. And this exhibit that you see here is the expansion of cotton. Once the cotton gin is created, cotton production, especially in this area, triples. And the pictures that you see to my right here, this is the home of the early American settler home Mount Locust, which was used as the inn for people who were transporting up and down the Natchez Trace, and also the Halston that's in the here, that the small picture. That's the that's the home of the Spanish governor, Gayosa, who lived here in Natchez. And Concord burned in 1901. The only remnants of that house that are still standing are the slave quarters that you can go and visit and tour with a lady by the name of Miss Deborah Cozy. And she will give you the story of the 124 enslaved people who lived on that property at that time. And we have here labor in the cotton era of Natchez. And because of cotton and slavery in this area, Natchez and the state of Mississippi had its own currency based off cotton and slavery. And then here you can see the cotton production in the 1830s, which is very large in the Natchez area, in a 30-year period, almost triples. And then also with the slave population, which it also grows in this area too. And that's because of the import and the export of slaves coming in and out of this area. And this is also during the time of the domestic slave trade. So enslaved people aren't being brought from Africa anymore. They're being brought from places like Virginia, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, Illinois, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and states throughout the South. Over here, this exhibit speaks, on this part of the exhibit, it speaks about Prince Abdul Rahman Ibrahim. And Prince Abdul Rahman Ibrahim was an African prince who was enslaved here in Natchez for 40 years. He had been captured in Africa during a war and then sold to a British slave ship and then in return sold into the Caribbean and then sold up the Mississippi River in the Natchez. He's bought by a man named Thomas Foster. And Thomas Foster basically gives this gentleman a leadership role on his plantation. He has about 9 children and he marries a woman named Isabella from South Carolina, who Thomas Foster also owned. So one day, Ibrahim is at a marketplace in here in Natchez, and he's selling potatoes for Thomas Foster, when a man by the name of Dr. John Cox recognizes him at the market. And he begins to tell all the people in Natchez about his fame, about Ibrahim as an African prince. And he gets the attention of the territorial governor, and he even gets the attention of a man named Henry Clay, who was the Secretary of State, and another man by the name of John Quincy Adams. And also with the help of the Sultan of Morocco, Ibrahim gets his freedom and he goes back to Africa. He doesn't go back to his homeland of Timbo, but he makes it back to Liberia, where he only lives there for 4 months before he dies from a sickness. His wife is eventually joined by 2 of the children who were enslaved in Natchez, and they join their mother Isabella, and their descendants live there even till this day. And in 2006, the family had a large family reunion where they had a family reunion at the very land that Foster enslaved Ibrahim and the family. And we also, because of this man's story, I wrote a reenactment called Isabella and the Prince, where his 7th and 8th generation granddaughters perform in the play. And so we've had a chance to perform Isabella and the Prince in Jackson, Memphis, Dallas, here in Natchez, and I think in Fayette, Mississippi. And there's a documentary out about his life called Prince Among Slaves that you can look up and learn more of his story. And it's also narrated by Mos Def.
Oh, wow.
Where was he from?
He was from near where Mali is in Africa. He was near Mali.
And
he was, yeah, he was educated in Timbuktu in the Islamic faith. So actually, a story about him when he was here in Natchez, he was the only person who could read. Andrew Marshak, this gentleman right here, who you see. Andrew Marshak is noted for bringing the first public library into Natchez. And so when he brings these different books here, he brings a couple of Arabic books. And Ibrahim is the only person here who in Natchez can read them. And so they ask him, they say, well, in your language, his name, his enslaved name is Prince. So they asked me, they said, Prince, can you write the Lord's Prayer in Arabic? So instead of writing the Lord's Prayer, he writes the first chapter of the Quran. And they couldn't read it, so. So that's what it came out to be with the other level. Okay, and also over here, this exhibit here speaks, cotton. This is what one bale of cotton would produce. One bale of cotton is 480 to 500 pounds, and it could produce 215 pairs of jeans, 250 bed sheets, 410 men's sport shirts, and this is an interesting $314,000 bill that cotton could produce, or one bale of cotton could produce. And also, to pick all of the cotton that is being grown here, those rich people who own the plantations here in Natchez had to buy their enslaved people from the Forks of the Road slave market. And we're going to have a chance to go to this location today. It's actually going to be the next site stop where we go to. And this, again, is the second largest slave market in the South. And one of the mottos when we get there, you're going to see was buy more Negroes to raise more cotton. And also you see over here advertisements. You come to the Forks of the Road, you need a house servant, you need a mechanic, you need a field hand, come to the Forks of the Road, you can buy them for various prices. In that 30-year period that this place is a market, the price of enslaved people go from $500 to by 1861, $1,600. And then also we had a group of planters here in the area, we call the 1,000 Club. And these are people who own up to 1,000 slaves here in the area. And the second name that you see on that list right here, the second name is Dr. Stephen Duncan. And Dr. Stephen Duncan at one time is one of the richest people here in America. And he owns a house called Arvin that is still open for tours. And by 1851, this gentleman owned up to 1,485 enslaved people in the area. By 1861, he owns 2,243 slaves here in the area. And this is also a list of the dealers. When we get to the Forks of the Road, there's a larger list of dealers here. Remember the name Isaac Franklin and John Armfield, as these two people are the kingpin slave dealers who made so much money from selling enslaved people. They retired by 1845 from the industry. And so the Forks of the Road also becomes a, in 1863 during the Civil War, a refuge site for the United States colored troops as they protect, preserve, and defend Natchez to what it is today. And those are relics that were dug up at the Forks of the Road here. And this, that gentleman that you see right here in the blue uniform, and on the picture down there is Mr. Boxley, who was instrumental in Forks of the Road being brought to the forefront to the Natchez history or the Natchez story. And because of his research and help from other universities and entities, the Forks of the Road story is told, and thousands of people go there per year to learn more about the story of the Forks of the Road. And this is an example of how people walked into Natchez during that time in what they call slave coffles. So if you've seen the movie Django Unchained or 12 Years a Slave, and you saw people roped or chained together, that's an example of a coffle. And yes, it was real life, and that's how people are brought into the area. And when we get to the Forks of the Road, you also get a chance to see why it's called Forks of the Road. As you see in the description here, it's because of three ways you can come into Natchez at that time. And when we get there, I'll show you how the road makes the fork. After slavery, we go into a period called Reconstruction. And these two gentlemen here are two important people in this area to that time period. This is John Roy Lynch, who went from slave to congressman to 1884. This gentleman was chairman of the Republican National Convention after being appointed by Theodore Roosevelt. And this is Hiram Rose Revels, who became the first African-American senator in the country, appointed to be United States Senator while being the pastor of Zion Chapel AME Church here in Natchez. And then we have over here, Black Planters. And this is August and Sarah Mazeek. And these two people here by the plantation that they were former slaves on, and then by another plantation down the road, and on up to 625 acres of property here in the Natchez and Adams County area. And then cotton played out. As you see here, cotton plays out in Natchez. In the early 1900s, the boll weevil attacks the cotton crops like here. And this is when the boll weevil hits, this is what kills the Natchez cotton-based economy. And Natchez will suffer for about 20 to 30 years until the industrial age of Natchez comes, when large factories are built here. And it also brings in jobs for whites and blacks, and it also brings another type of culture that we're going to talk about when we go into this room. Any questions?
Don't be shy, guys.
From slavery reconstruction, and then you walk into this room, you walk into the civil rights movement, the African American church, the display over there, and also the African American home. During the 19, after slavery, black people in this area were fighting for civil rights like no other. The NAACP was formed here in Natchez in the early 1920s. But they ceased to exist by the end of the decade, and they re-emerged themselves by the 1940s under the leadership of a man named Dr. Aldrin Malcolm. But he was ran out of town by the Ku Klux Klan and moved to Chicago. Well, by 1963, this man that you see in the picture in the center is a man by the name of George Metcalf. And George Metcalf was from Louisiana and had moved here because of all of the plant jobs that had been open here. And he got himself all involved with the civil rights movement. And at one time, he would probably be the only person here advocating for civil rights. He was a member of the state NAACP with the gentleman that you see beside him, Necker Evers. And he chose to lead the movement here in Natchez. In 1964, he lived on St. Catherine Street, which I'm gonna show you where he lived today. And he had couple of bomb threats, and he had even some shots rang out at his house for his work in the civil rights movement. And then early August of 1965, a school petition began to circulate to desegregate the schools here in Natchez. And his name was on the list of one of the circulators of the petition. And this put a target on his back, as the Ku Klux Klan said, well, we got to get rid of that Metcalf. And so on August the 27th, 1965, they placed a bomb in this gentleman's car and blew him up. He survived the injuries. But a day later, if you look right behind you, you see the man's right here, this poster here. Ten demands were made upon the city of Natchez for equal rights for the African American community. A day later, and these demands will be followed with an economic boycott where the African American community didn't spend money in the stores downtown Natchez. And it also led to 6 to 7 stores in downtown Natchez closing. And on December 3rd, 1965, which you see right here on this article, is the Natchez Agreement, where where the city of Natchez agreed to meet the demands of the protesters. And this was the beginning process of the end of segregation in Natchez. The end began to see the end until 1968 after the Natchez riot, where after an incident of a shooting in downtown Natchez, African-Americans looted and burned a couple of stores. And this led to the election of a man named Tony Byrne. And Tony Byrne would be the foundation to end racial segregation in Natchez, as he served as mayor of Natchez for 20 years after that. And also what destabilized the Ku Klux Klan in the Natchez area was this group here called the Deacons for Defense. And this was a group of World War II, Korean War, and as you were calling the Street Brothers, who began to arm themselves and fight against the Ku Klux Klan here in the Natchez area. As you see, the Ku Klux Klan had a presence here, as they would walk around Natchez with no mask on their face.
You're shameless.
Civil rights movement, and just for everyday life for African Americans. This is Rose Hill Missionary Baptist Church. This is the oldest African American Baptist church in Mississippi, and it was founded in 1834. And it still have service there every Sunday. And this is Holy Family Catholic Church. This is the oldest African American Catholic church in Mississippi, and it was founded in 1890. This is Zion Chapel AME Church, originally built as the Second Presbyterian Church. By 1868, Zion Chapel buys the church for $7,000, and they had a pastor, Hiram Revels. And Hiram Revels became United States Senator in 1870, while being the pastor of this church. And here is the model of an African-American home after slavery and the Reconstruction period. So this is how some African-American homes looked in the mid-1900s and even into the latter parts of the 1900s. You ever had one of these on your head?
Yeah, so far.
You got a hot comb? Oh yeah, I know the feeling. Well, there were those the trees that had moss in your bones.
Spanish moss?
Yes, ma'am.
Do they use it fresh or is it dried?
I didn't let it dry.
Then it dried.
Get the bugs out of it too.
Oh, that's right, for sure.
Any one of you ever been in the house and seen anything similar to anything that you see here?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yes, I've seen plenty of houses like this.
Any questions, guys? Is there still any kind of presence in this little area?
If they are, we don't have to see them. So they might wear suits now. I haven't had a chance to experience it yet. famous author from the area. So when you get to that room, up the next room, you get a chance to see his life in the exhibit. The African statues along the wall that you see here were donated by the lady that you see on the oil painting there, Miss Thelma Wallace Williams. And she ran an African museum here in Natchez from 2005. And when she couldn't run it no more, she donated the African sculptures that you see along the walls to this museum. The exhibit in the middle was done by Mr. Boxley, who I showed you in the other room. And this is an exhibit about the transatlantic slave trade from Africa to Natchez. And the pictures along the wall were done by a local artist named Joseph Johnson, who uses the technique called pointillism to portray how life was in Natchez after the Civil War. And that's our military exhibit there that talks about the military presence of African Americans from the Civil War to the war in Desert Storm. And I'll let you all have a look around and soak it in.
There's so much to that.